It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Cazzora, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 14, Episode 124. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Cazzora, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Sunday, Steelers Nation. Dave, just like that, just like it always goes, the 2024 NFL Draft is in the books. Day three concluding on Saturday, rounds 4 through 7, in the undrafted frenzy that always takes place afterwards. Pittsburgh Steelers drafting three more players to round out their draft. And just quick thought overall, Dave, I had this tweet yesterday. I'm sure I'm not alone in this opinion. I think for his first two NFL drafts last year and this year, you can credibly and easily argue that Omar Khan and the Pittsburgh Steelers had among, if not the best drafts in football. So I think a really, really good weekend for this team.
I mean, yeah, I mean, when you look at what us outsiders would deem as value and hitting positions that the team needed, you know, going into this draft. And you look at obviously some of the key measurables that we look at, and the RAS scores and athleticism and do they fit and character and, you know, all the little things that we like to look at. I mean, I like to say that you know, it's hard to argue with a lot of selections. I'll tell you that. I mean, you can argue maybe should they have gone a different player, I guess, to some degree, or different position or whatnot. But I mean, as far as positions and stuff that they hit, I mean, yeah, it's a good class. But I mean, obviously, you can't judge these things until you get about 3-4 years, you know, down the road when it comes to it. But I mean, we're not going to put him in the Hall of Fame yet, but
no. But just for evaluating the draft for what it is, you know, it doesn't mean anything for 3 years from now. But it's great picks.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they were great picks for sure.
All right, we'll get into those picks today. I just want to thank the whole listener base and all the readers for the site. Tremendous draft weekend, our best ever. I certainly want to thank our Steelers Depot crew and draft team for their amazing work. I think our best draft process ever in terms of being prepared. I had scouting reports on the ready for all 7 of their selections, even a couple of the undrafted guys we'll talk about a little bit later. Man, the guys worked really hard. It's a long weekend. It's a tough weekend for sure. It's a lot of late nights and early mornings, but I think all the hard work we've had since really the season ended in that wild card loss to Buffalo, going from Shrine Bowl to Senior Bowl to Combine to Pro Days to all the scouting reports we did, all that work paid off this weekend.
Oh, absolutely. We had a lot of hardworking folks, and you know, you obviously included in that. And you rewind back to when the season ends, and you know, we spend so much time, you know, covering the Steelers specifically up until their season officially comes to an end. And then we have to switch gears and get into being ready for the Senior Bowl and trying to learn as much about as many prospects as possible. And then, you know, fast forward on into the, you know, the other aspects of it with the combine. And you just find yourself having to take in a lot of information as quick as possible. So hat tip to our guys and the process that we go through every year. It really is enjoyable. Boy, when you get into those middle to late stages of these things, and you're able to kind of fluidly talk about a lot of, you know, a lot of these players because of either those profiles are up on the site or you've actually watched the tape yourself, that makes it really, really, you know, fun part of the process. So yeah, I enjoyed it, and hats off to everybody.
Yeah, for sure. So let's get into the picks here today. Dave, the three final selections of Mason McCormick, the guard from South Dakota State, in the fourth round, Logan Lee, the defensive lineman from Iowa, in the sixth round, and then also in the sixth round with the team's final selection, Ryan Watts, the defensive back, cornerback from Texas. Let's talk about Mason McCormick, Dave, the third offensive lineman that Pittsburgh had drafted. So I think it was pretty clear what their focus was in this draft. You get big physical people up front to rebuild and revamp your trenches.
Yeah, and Andy White will probably got a little bit of his fingerprints on this thing as well, too, with suggestions. Man, you look back now at the these last two drafts, five offensive linemen taken by the Steelers in these previous two drafts. You roll back to last year, you had Broderick Jones in the first. It was bookend last year. Broderick Jones in the first, Spencer Anderson in the seventh. You fast forward to this year, obviously Troy Fautano in the first round. You follow that up with Zach Frazier in the second round. And then you get into the fourth round here and Mason McCormick. So in emphasis on getting them these trenches taken care of over these last two drafts here. And I mean, I think this is a look, I them going guard there surprised me a bit. I'm sure it did you as well too. I mean, we knew this was a guy that checked a lot of boxes for them. They brought him in for a pre-draft visit. We kind of both looked at him as one of those maybe break glass in case of emergency type guards that could potentially, you know, move to center should they have not gotten a, you know, center early in this thing. So I tell you this, it looks like they did kind of follow their board. This was the best player still on the board here. And, you know, even though they had other positions of need, they were going to not bypass on a good player. And that's kind of feels like why they went the direction that they did with Mason McCormick.
Yeah, I think it was truly about getting value. And I would say that day three in this year's draft didn't have the depth and talent that probably some future drafts will, when you have a record low of underclassmen, older prospects overall. I think you'll probably see that normalized in the future. So really on day three in general, you're focused on talent and getting just the best players who are still out there, focusing a little less on need, because hopefully you're not counting on fourth round and below picks to, you know, be the immediate contributor. So you really focus on the value. I thought Omar Kondo made a good point in his post pick press conference. He talked about, you know, some guys on the final year of their contracts. We know that James Daniels is on the last year of his deal. We'll see if an extension happens or not, but he's scheduled to be a free agent right now. And Nate Herbig is a free agent after this season as well. Correct, Dave?
Signed a 2-year deal. Yes, right. 2-year yeah. deal with him.
So you got two guards that are, you know, not under contract past this season, and to have some depth and some protection there, I can see taking McCormick. And I really, you know, there were other needs, maybe they were a little bit higher, quote unquote, but there was no other player on the board that I sat there and said, you had to get this guy, you know, and again, you focus on the talent and the value of somebody like Mason McCormick. I can understand the direction the team went in.
Well, look, you had a long wait after that pick from McCormick until their first selection in the sixth round, and there were a lot of players, obviously, that went off the board after they took McCormick. And I just put up the redraft exercise, so I'm able to cheat and look at all those names there. But I mean, let you know, if you look at, you know, just probably the names that went, you know, immediately after Mason McCormick, I mean, Jalen Wright, a running back, they weren't going to go that way. Barner, a tight end, they weren't going to go that way. Apologies to you, but they probably weren't going to draft Torrey Taylor, Alex, the punter. Cade Stover, another tight end. Now, Malik Mustafa, I wonder if that's a name that shows up maybe in our redraft exercise for several people. Bucky Irving, that little smaller running back out of Oregon. Giovanni Manu, who I didn't even watch.
He was the British Columbia kid.
Right. The tackle out of British Columbia. Will Shipley, who we know out of Clemson, a running back. Yeah, you had a running back run there, really, in that round. After the Steelers drafted Mason McCormick. So I guess to some degree, if you look down this list, at least of the, I don't know what, 20 players after Mason McCormick came off the board, how many of those guys would the Steelers really have addressed? And you know, obviously they needed a cornerback at the time, right? And a lot of us were screaming for a cornerback, but who would that cornerback or second wide receiver had been had they gone that direction, I guess, is the question. And it goes back to what I said. You know, Mason McCormick, for guys that they liked and had ranked on their board, it seems like they went with the best player ranked on their board that they like.
Yeah, no, I think so. Let's talk about McCormick himself. To me, you're getting a blend of size, athleticism, and experience. He's a big guy, 6'3", 300-plus pounds, almost 34-inch arms. He tested well overall. There might be some tape concerns about him, kind of more out in space, but from a testing standpoint, he was excellent. And you can't find more experience than Mason McCormick. 70 career games. How many starts? 50-plus? I mean, this guy's played as much football as anybody in this draft.
How many snaps did I say he had just at left guard alone? Over 3,000.
It's over 9,000. That's what we're talking about.
Over 3,000.
What? That's impossible. I know you still don't know anything, any context to this, but I
know that. I know it. I know it. Every time I pretend like I think that I know it, that you get a kick out of it. That's why I do that. But over 3,000 snaps at left guard. I even added that up in Excel by year, and I had to double check it because it didn't look right. You know. Mm-hmm. I haven't watched a ton of tape on him, obviously, but I've watched just a little bit to kind of get a sense of what he is. You get through, 30, 40 plays of this thing, and then you get through another 10 or 15 of kind of highlights with him. Gets Richie Incognito vibes with him.
On the field only, I hope.
Yeah, on the field, that kind of thick upper body. I mean, this guy's got to be country strong, right? I mean, did 32 reps on the bench at 6'2", 33 and what, 7/8, or I guess it depends on where he got measured at, combine or pro day. I mean, those are some long arms for a guard, right? Yeah,
32 reps with that kind of arm length. Again, typically the longer arms you have because of if we forget the formula, but you know how much further you have to travel the bar, usually your bench number is not going to be that great. But that, as you said, Dave, that is a truly strong man.
32 reps, and then you look at the arm length on him, and there's some tackles in this class that love to have arms that long. The RAS profile, as a whole, and then you just kind of look how he plays. Now, look, he's like a square on the move, right? I mean, there's not much definition to him overall. You look at him, on the hoof, but I mean, he can move in short area. He can get off the line into the second level, and boy, he likes to punish people, and then he likes to gore them on the way down to the ground. I mean, once again, this guy got, you get some Richie Incognito vibes with him on the field. He, as far as position flexibility goes, where did I put that he has as center snaps there?
It was some. It was 30. I mean, it wasn't a lot. I forget the exact number, but he has done it, and he's confident he can play guard or center.
I found the tweet. 3,378 snaps at left guard, 19 at right guard, 15 of them at center. Now, he went on to say, I guess, during one of the pressers, that he's repped at all, you know, I guess either in practice or in, you know, obviously in game time, that he's repped all three of the interior positions. It sounds like he feels comfortable in playing wherever they want him to play at. So the knock, I guess, at least the initial knock on Mason McCormick will be, well, you got this guy down in you know, smaller conference here, beating up on future furniture movers and all like that. Okay. Well, I mean, that is true, but I mean, it doesn't take long when looking at those few clips there, that this was the big kid on the field, the bully. It's not his fault that he's in that situation there. So, and then didn't they also, I mean, he was a Shrine Bowl, right?
Right. You got a chance to see him play up against some more quote unquote better competition.
Right. Steelers had an undrafted guy a couple years ago that tore his knee up. What was that kid's name? Nick Imbarol?
Yeah. The San Diego State kid, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
You kind of get some vibes from what I remember about that kid as well, too. I mean, you got a fourth round pick invested in a guy like McCormick. It's not often you get guards that size with that arm length that are going to post measurables and can move like that. You know, you're not going to ask them to run 40 yards down the field or anything like that, you know, probably very often there. But I mean, he can move in short area. It seems like he can play all three positions interior there. I mean, is this your... What's interesting now is the discussion that comes out of this. What does this mean to the depth chart? Because fourth rounders normally make the team, right?
With rare exceptions, as long as you're not Duran Grant or Fred Gibson, right, he'll be on the 53, yes.
So what does this do? Does Herbig need to hope that he check that lease or what?
I mean, we'll see. It's a good problem to have. So few teams have offensive line depth. Most teams are desperate to add. That's why you see so many offensive linemen go early, because there's such a scarcity of talent for starters, let alone depth in the NFL. I mean, if Herbig's going to be the backup center, there's going to be value in that. You know, he may get pushed by Spencer Anderson. Maybe McCormick sees some reps there. We'll see. But I think Pittsburgh's just going to be happy to have a lot of options and depth on the O-line. Injuries are inevitable, obviously. And so, you know, we'll let the depth charts and those things play out once we get closer to camp.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, you've got a couple of players in Herbig and James Daniels that their contract, at least right now, are currently set to expire after this season here. So even if you have a guy like Mason McCormick that ends up having to be inactive a lot of his rookie season for whatever reason, you know, you're building towards the future when it comes to an interior line spot. And for, you know, for all we know, he might end up just being a career kind of backup guy, but you know, at least he gives you some options there for sure.
I mean, let's just run through. Let's way too early. I'm not going to try to categorize depth charts, but let's say they keep nine offensive linemen. Let's just assume for a second Fautanu's a starter. Doesn't matter which tackle in this conversation. Right. So you have backups more. I'm still high on Dylan Cook. Then you're going to have Herbig, McCormick. That's nine. You know, they get Anderson in there too, but that's kind of like the 10 guys might be fighting for nine spots.
And then it feels like maybe it's more of a battle right now between Anderson and for the other tackle spot.
With Cook?
Cook.
Right.
Anderson and Cook maybe for the ninth spot then.
Sure. And they could theoretically keep 10. And then, of course, one guy goes down with an injury and there's your nine. Whoever right. the guy's hurt is off and you bump in Anderson. So I think Pittsburgh's in a really good spot with their starters and their depth and all the options they have.
The tape that I want to go drill down specifically is from last year from, I mean, not from, it would be from 2022 against Iowa. That game from South Dakota State versus Iowa.
You know who had a sack in that game?
Logan Lee, probably.
Logan right? Lee had a sack in that game. It did not come against McCormick. I found the clip. McCormick, it was off of play action. McCormick kind of maybe should have had a little extra help there on the tackle, but I wouldn't charge that on McCormick. But yeah, kind of funny to see. But yeah, somebody asked Pat Meyer, did you guys watch the Iowa tape? Yeah, they watched the Iowa tape. They're gonna watch the best competition that McCormick got to see. So I got to go through that game as well. I think it's out there. I think you got a bunch of games on file, Dave, that we'll go through. But I mean, he's kind of a Herbig type, as you said, incognito type, just kind of mauling, run blocker. There's going to be some maybe space limitations. We'll see how he fits in this more zone basis, wide zone based system. But again, the value and just the identity of we want some big physical people. Mike Tomlin on, I think it was NFL Network or ESPN after the picks, and was asked, why'd you guys take three offensive linemen? And Tomlin said, we want to roll people. And that is, I mean, hey, I love it. And Steeler fans will love to hear that.
I'll end it with this so we can get to the next pick. McCormick is a grown man.
Grown man, for sure. Well said, Dave. All right, next pick. It was a bit of a wait till 178 in the sixth round, but they took Logan Lee, a defensive lineman we just mentioned from Iowa. Again, kind of has that Loudermilk body type of he's got height, he's got a frame to add to, he lacks some length, but a guy that Pittsburgh has shown interest in. I mean, so many of these guys ended up being their pre-draft visit list from their guys that came into the facility, and Lee and McCormick were among that group. So kind of figured they would look for D-line depth on day three. We talked about that prior to yesterday on our podcast, and so that's what happened at pick 178.
You know, have you ever thought about when we roll back in these things almost? I mean, it's hard to do. I mean, unfortunately, we don't have people, or maybe there's a listener or two out there cataloging everything we say. I don't know. But you roll back to the very early stages of the conversations when we get into the pre-draft talk. A lot of times, a lot of our gut kind of short list of players that we're sifting through out of Shrine Bowl, Senior Bowl, those end up probably being the closest to what actually happening. Because then what happens is we outthink ourselves moving through the rest of the process sometime. I can remember every year to explain to people what we do before these everybody starts getting shipped off to the Shrine Bowl and the Senior Bowl. I try to build these Excel sheets for everybody that we fly out to the different directions there. What these Excel sheets are is just a list of kind of the invites that we know either to the Shrine Bowl or the Senior Bowl. They have the players' bios, college bios linked to them, whatever measurements we can cobble together that we think are close to being correct. What else do we put in those sheets? We try to link to stats, bios. What else do we have? Any kind of short notes from like Draft Scout, I think, included in there. And the reason we build those things out is just so that our people can go through the list of names and quickly try to get themselves acclimated to as many of these guys as they can. Now, look, you're not going to know everybody, all these list of invites, but at least you can learn a little bit and kind of get familiar with their measurements, their height, weight, and all like that. So you're not going in kind of blind with this thing there. And when putting those together, Logan Lee, did his initial measurements come out like 190 something? Do you remember what that initial Shrine Bowl sheet said?
Measurements 190 something? What are you referring to?
190 is weight. I mean, 290.
Okay, yeah. I'd have to go back and check. He probably played a bit heavier. It's not uncommon for these guys to drop a bit of weight and test faster. Loudermilk was in that bucket as well. So I can go back and look at it at Was he Shrine Bowl? Senior Bowl? Where did he?
He was Shrine Bowl, wasn't he?
Okay. I can look to see what he weighed in at the Shrine Bowl.
Well, anyway, what I'm getting at is, you know, when you look at a lot of these guys, especially when you're looking at potential draft picks ahead of these all-star games, you know, you're kind of doing a little bit of measurement hunting, especially when it comes mm-hmm. to defensive linemen. And he stuck out. And anyway, that ended up being one of the first guys that you and I crawled down the hall. I mean, I went right to his tape and said, man, I got to see this kid. I was kind of disappointed coming out of that tape initially there because, A, it didn't look like he looked as heavy as the listed weight, and it, B, it didn't look like he kind of played as heavy as the initial measurements were there. My initial take with him, for people that roll back, was, yeah, there's something to work with there for sure. Just my biggest thing was it felt like the Brent Urban. Remember Brent Urban out of
Virginia?
Was it Virginia?
Virginia, and then he's been with Baltimore most of his career.
Right. I think one of my analysis on him was he got to get sand in his pants there. Got to be able to fill himself out a little bit more underneath there. Because oftentimes you see him moved in a run game and stuff like that. Now, the thing with Logan Lee is the athleticism is on display as a gap penetrator. You see him do some good things there. I think he likes to use a little bit of a chop as a kind of his go-to inside move there. At Iowa, they moved him up and down the defensive line. He'll obviously play probably a little bit further away from the center, more in that anywhere from 2 to 5 technique. I think Carl Dunbar, said as much. He's a defensive end in their system there, so he'll work more against guards and tackles overall. There is obviously the athleticism on. Some people wondered, is this guy an edge? Can he go the other way? Can he drop weight and be an edge? Or can he pick up weight and kind of be, or is he going to be a base end in the NFL? Or is he going to be kind of a 4-eye, 5 technique in kind of like the Steelers front there? So there's definitely something to work with there. I think he's got to get stronger, Alex. I would like to see him fill out in the bottom half there. But he is a guy that I think that you have now that can – hopefully push guys like Loudermilk and or DeMarvin Leal.
Yeah, I agree. I think you summed up his scouting report well. There is a frame to add weight at the Shrine Bowl. He came in at 286. He was 281 for the combine. So
that's right.
I think he good call. I think he probably played heavier during his time at Iowa and wanted to get a bit faster, especially for the combine. I think the frame is there to add. The length is a concern, but I've been saying for a little bit now, you know, I think Pittsburgh still wants guys who have that 6'5", 300 pounds, or capable of becoming 300 pounds and adding weight look. But length, maybe they prioritize that a bit less when you have a Loudermilk and you sign a Dean Lowry who's got very short arms and you draft a Logan Lee and had interest in Braden Fisk. And if you're one-gapping more and not having to control blocks as often, the length becomes a little less important. It's still obviously important. You'd rather have a longer guy than a shorter arm guy, but it may not be as critical as it used to be. It's just harder to find those guys as well. So you have to make some compromises and some sacrifices. But Lee's got a hot motor, consistent production. There's some flexibility on the D-line for him. Better pass rusher, better athlete than a Loudermilk, who is just a pure run stuffer with really no pass rush juice. I think Lee will offer more. And you're going to have some pretty deep competition come camp between Lee, Loudermilk, Leal, etc.
He's got some big hands too, doesn't he?
9 7/8 at the Shrine Bowl. I don't know what the combine was, but around 10 inches.
I thought they came in right closer, maybe to 10.
Maybe at the combine. The measurements can change. I think the two events measure things slightly differently. I don't have the combine stuff up here, but yeah, either way, he's got big hands.
He's another former wrestler, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're just drafting. If you wrestled in high school, man, you're sold. Pittsburgh's got you.
Yeah, what, 3 or 4 guys in this draft class of former wrestlers there. So obviously, I don't think he is as decorated or successful as a guy as Zach Frazier. be interesting to watch those two go get put on the mat against each other, Frazier and Logan Lee. But look, I think Logan's going to be a developmental guy. I think if he can fill out, kind of not be so robotic. I think that's another thing that's in my notes here. And look, a lot of those guys with this size later round guys, defensive line guys, end up being a little robotic overall there. He's got to work on some counters. Against a run, he's just got to be able to plan himself a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, do you think, though, he is a better athlete and pass rusher than Loudermilk, just kind of comparing the two guys?
Oh, yeah. He's not as robotic even as Loudermilk. No.
Yeah, when you say robotic, are you talking like the stiffness? Is he kind of better in shooting a gap and just penetrating?
He needs to go forward off the ball. Okay,
I see. I got you. Yeah, I'm with you overall. And I'm sure you'll see some wrestling on the field between Frazier and Lee. I'm sure in camp they're going to go against each other a couple times throughout the summer. So we'll see exactly where they want to use him. Again, it's going to be, you know, just basically used the way that, you know, a lot of milk and those guys are used, some 4-eye, some 3-tech, rotating in sub packages. Pittsburgh needs to get deeper. This is not your long-term answer for Cam Haywood, and there's still, I think, are big concerns about, you know, being able to reliably reduce Cam Hayward's snap count and certainly to find his eventual replacement. That plan is not in place right now, but for the short term, there is hopefully some better depth.
Logan Lee's got a little bit of bend to him, you know, as far as that ankle flexion as well, too. So you see him be able to turn, get in some of those tight creases there and turn the corner a little bit overall as well, too. A good kid. I mean, you see the interviews with him and, you know, clean character on him overall. I just think the biggest thing with him is, you know, can he fill out, can he get a little bit of sand in his pants and, you know, develop from there. But I mean, it's understandable why they went that route with him, for a guy still on the board in the sixth round.
Sure. No surprise there. And then with the final pick at number 195, it is the Josh Kearney favorite, Ryan Watts from Texas. I think they called him a corner. He's played corner most of his Longhorns career. There have been some belief he would maybe have to go to safety. He's got a bit of a safety background as well. Watts talked about his versatility, being able to wear multiple hats. And so maybe he's used in a couple different ways, but big, long, I think fairly athletic in terms of testing. I believe there are some questions over the long speed that he has to stick at corner, why some thought he might convert to safety. But what we said, Dave, going into day three, listening back to the podcast just a short time ago, I said they're going to take D-line, they're going to take something in the secondary, and then kind of take BPA elsewhere. I think McCormick was kind of their BPA pick. They go D-line with Lee, they go secondary with Watts.
6'2" and 7/8", 208 pounds, 34.5 inch arms, Alex. And if you look at the corners at the combine alone, that is the longest arms on a corner other than, well, no, it was. The second longest was Roe Torrance, I think, out of Arizona State, if that number is correct there. And it's not even close with some of these corners at the combine there. 34.5. What was Joey Porter's arms?
About the same. I'll double check here. But yeah, I'm betting there is no corner that had longer arms in this year's class than Ryan Watts.
And then the hands too, 9 3/8 on him. None of these corners. Or I take that Cooper Dijon, 9 5/8. So he did have, and then also TJ Tampa, some big hands as well too. But needless to say, he got some hands on him at 9 3/8. But 34.5 inch arms. Are you kidding me?
34 on Porter, so he's longer than Porter, which I didn't know was possible for a corner to be longer than Joey Porter Jr.
I mean, we got to, I didn't, you know, this is coming off the cuff. We're going to have to see if there's been a corner with there can't be that many corners that have been drafted over time with arms longer than 34.5.
I'll have to look at that. It's not as popular as it used to be, but the web, remember the old webs right. that they would do for those kind of percentiles? I mean, he's got to be in that 99th percentile. I'm sure somebody, yeah. I mean, what did Richard Sherman and those guys have, but I mean, his length is obviously elite, elite.
Look, I haven't had a chance last night. We were all worn out. We're trying to get stuff ready for Sunday and all like that. I haven't got a chance to go deep on him. I do know that he was used. He moved all over the place in that Texas defense. He logged snaps at outside corner, slot corner, and free safety there. So, yeah, could this kind of be maybe a guy that you maybe work with as a slot guy? Or is he going to be outside? I mean, he moved around, had to play some deep center field for them. I haven't gotten deep into his tape, so I want to explore how, you know, how all he – I want to look at his kind of his slot snaps, you know, specifically. But as a seventh-round draft pick, you get a guy with this kind of length on him that can play multiple positions – have the athletic profile. I mean, this is another one that about jumped out of the building, wasn't he? 40 and a half inch vertical jump, 10 foot, 5 inch broad jump.
Yeah, the explosion numbers were excellent. I don't know what his RES was, but it had to have been good. His 40 time was just probably average, quote unquote, 4.53, but still really good athletic profile overall. I mean, yeah, I got to watch him some more. We have the report from Josh up on the site. So we certainly have a lot of information to provide you guys from his standpoint, kind of look at a dime kind of a build to him where he's going to maybe play in dime packages and move around pre-snap, post-snap and, you know, line up in some different spots. There's some versatility there. In some ways, it reminds me of Corey Trice last year. Body type might not be exactly the same, but good athletes overall, versatility. Remember Trice was a safety to begin his Purdue career, moved down the corner. And so there was a little bit of, you know, potential versatility with him. Watts does not have the medical concerns. I don't believe that Trice does. So I think you're looking at dime package type stuff and then obviously special teams and what he could offer there as a big guy that can tackle.
Let's see. Math Bomb has Ryan Watts run as a listed as a free safety and an RAS of 9.12 with that. If you run him as a cornerback, he goes from 9.12 to 8.80. The bench time killed him and the 20-yard split time killed him when it comes to that.
And the 20, I think, is a projection. I don't even think he uses right. actual data on the 20 split. What was his bench?
Just got out of like 10, I think.
Okay. Yeah. But again, when you have length, when you have 34 and a half inch arms, your bench is going to be, you're not going to do 20 times, you know, because of the distance that bar has to travel. So to me, that's not a representation of really necessarily his play strength. But go ahead.
The bad thing about having a seventh round draft pick is you don't get the position coach. Right. When you have the last guy of your draft selected, I don't think they've ever. We had to roll back. I can't remember, but usually that selection is followed by Mike Tomlin in the GM press conference there. So you don't get the position coach to come out and talk about the player. But it sure would have been nice to get Terrell Austin or Grady Brown to come out and talk about him.
Yeah, it would have been. But I think he talked about what he can offer. Again, you're talking special teams. You're talking some positional versatility, trying to make that last spot. Gunner spots are open right now. I could certainly see Watts get in the mix to be a gunner along with guys like Trice and Darius Rush and others. So that's where he'll try to make this team.
What were some of the highlights from Josh Carney on him? We should have had Josh on. Josh can talk about him.
Yeah, we'll get those. Yeah, well, he was a big fan. I should note as well, I'll take a little victory lap for the what they look for study. Only one cornerback who checked every single box, and it was Ryan Watts. Now, again, I know he may convert, and people can throw that in my face. They were trying to on Twitter, but I'll take my victory lap for Ryan Watts being the one guy.
They were giving you a hard time for that.
I got some pushback. They were like, "Oh, he's going to go to safety. He's not a corner." I'm not even sure if that's going to happen, but there was a little pushback on that. And I will still take my victory lap though.
Yeah, you should, because I mean, there was only one on the corner list this year.
It was him. It was Ryan Watts.
Right.
Yep.
Let's see. Josh writes here, after watching Watts up close and personal at the Shrine Bowl, I was a bit underwhelmed overall, especially for especially with his move to safety. But then when I put on a tape at Texas last season, came away rather intrigued. He has great size for the cornerback position, could without a doubt handle an every down role as a box safety, he says. He tested off the charts. The concerns with the long speed at corner and the struggles to find and track the ball in the air in coverage are real, but his physicality, length, and experience at two major programs are very intriguing overall and warrant a flyer on day three, which was about what happened there. At worst, he's a longer-term special teams contributor who can provide depth in the secondary. Good job, Josh. That's a good read there. He's got some good clips on him. Alex, you and I will dig deeper into the tape when it comes to him, and we will revisit our discussion here. Good job, and Josh.
Yeah, Josh, I think nailed it. And in terms of the two programs, he began his college career at Ohio State and then transferred to Texas the last two seasons. The production, yeah, I think, one interception, 2 years at Texas, had, I think, two at Ohio State. So the ball production has been relatively minimal, but I think there's some intriguing just athleticism and size. Again, you don't see many DBs. I don't care if you're talking corner or safety with his profile to have, 6'3", 210, 34 and a half inch arms. Just that profile is pretty uncommon. To get that in the sixth round, I think, is something worth taking the chance on.
Evidently, he's a little bit of a character too, and he got him rolling in one of the pre-draft, was it combine or one of the meetings he had with the team?
His formal combine. Yeah, we had written about this weeks ago that he was on a podcast, and somebody asked him, "What was your favorite interview?" And he said he had a great time talking with Pittsburgh, and he had them cracking up. I don't know about what, but he just enjoyed the conversation there. So, and it appears they enjoyed it as well.
It does indeed. Okay, we promise to dive deeper into the tape on not only these three but the other draft picks as well too. But we talked a lot about Logan Lee in this process. We talked a little bit about McCormick, right? And position flexibility and all like that. I think we did mention Watts a few times, especially when it came to the box checking type aspect of that there. So, some guys we had a little bit familiarity about here in the third day of the draft.
Yeah. Now, again, most of it's because five of their seven picks came in for visits, which is on the high end. Usually it's two or three, maybe right. Half the selections. This year it was almost all of them. The only exceptions were Roman Wilson, and they were at his pro day and had dinner with him. And then Ryan Watts, who they talked to at the combine. So it was a year to kind of really be chalk. And frankly, the 2 years under Omar Khan, they've been really even heavier with their pre-draft visit selections. They had three or four last year. I know Porter was local. And then you have five this year. So you're talking, whatever the math is on that, probably over half their picks have been guys that came in for 30 visits.
Didn't Mike Tomlin say a few days ago to not pay too much attention to that?
That's probably one of those. It's the equivalent of him talking to Will Shipley. Just throw you guys off the scent. Yeah, don't look at our 30 list here, other right. teams. But yeah, I think you can point to that. And frankly, for next year's mock, you just take the 30 list, find the team needs, and you're probably good to go in terms of predicting what's going to happen.
He tried the Jedi mind trick us there. This is not the droid you're looking for.
Right. This is not the mock draft, the visit list you're looking for. All right, Dave. Let's talk about the five undrafted free agents. The team said they've agreed to terms with. That is Beanie Bishop, the corner from West Virginia, Dewan Edwards, the running back from Georgia, John Rhys Plumlee, the quarterback from Central Florida, Julius Welshoff, the linebacker edge from Charlotte, and Jacoby Windman, the linebacker from Michigan State. Pittsburgh never has exciting undrafted free agent classes. They don't pay the way that other teams pay, but I think actually an interesting name here, especially in Beanie Bishop, a guy that was a second team All-American last year, came in for a visit, four interceptions. I think as far as Steelers UDFA classes go, this one is very small as things stand right now. But there's actually some intrigue for this class.
Yeah, this is going to be the one of, how about that process last night of trying to search for these kids? Do you want to talk about disappointing A, it took a long time for the first name to finally surface, the Georgia running back. And then, you know, only five in total, right?
So, right, as of right now.
And, you know, got a couple invite kids and all like that. The whole process of that was disappointing after the draft. But at least the state has released the names real quick, not too long into the night there. Beanie Bishop is going to be the guy to talk about it. Can't wait to see what the signing bonus is on him. I mean, if you only got this few of an undrafted class and you don't shell out the guaranteed money, guaranteed salary like other teams do, and I can almost guarantee you that's not going to happen this year. You'd have to think Beanie Bishop's phone had been ringing as well too, right?
You'd think. I mean, he's undersized, but you know, he was productive last year. He came in for a visit as well, a local guy, but I'm betting because he came in, maybe you could kind of convince him, hey, take a little less money from us. You know that you know us, you met the coaches, you know the facility, and we've shown interest in you. You know, there's a real opportunity in the slot because there's still nothing there as things stand right now. So maybe those factors influenced him, but I'm going to guess he got the highest signing bonus,
yep.
But it's probably going to be 20K, 25K, something like that.
Yeah, probably be under 30, but it should be the highest of the group here when it comes to him. And it's going to be interesting to see if he can, you know, if he can snatch that job.
It'll be open. There's something open for him right now. So, again, have the report on him up on the site as well on Beanie Bishop with Edwards. I'm going to watch him either today or tomorrow. I have not watched him at all so far, but I just was reading a couple things as people were announcing and reacting to Edwards coming to Pittsburgh. Some people were like his pass protection, his vision, and so I'm curious to kind of see how that looks on tape. There were some people that were pretty high on him. He was productive last year, almost 900 yards, 13 touchdowns. Did not run well at his pro day. He ran 4.71, and so that's obviously a big knock there. He's kind of a stockier, shorter, with some size to him in terms of the weight, 215 or so. So I got to see him on tape, but there might be a third down type of vibe with Edwards.
Yeah, he came in, I think, under 5'10", around 213 at his pro day. As you said, didn't run great, 4.70 at his pro day. He's got his work cut out for him, you know, for sure. I have not watched any of him yet.
Yeah, but Pittsburgh, they get a Georgia guy coming in here. Did not draft one, but they take one in Edwards. Welshoff, the linebacker from Charlotte, is pretty interesting. And apparently, this is a tweet from Mike Kay, there's going to be an exemption for him through some sort of international kind of program. I don't know exactly the details on that. He was born in Germany, played a couple of years at Michigan. Spent last year at Charlotte, got hurt four games in. His production overall is really light. He's listed at his pro day at like 6'6", 257. So it's a pretty awkward looking body type there, but I think he'll be an edge type and join a couple of former Charlotte guys, Alex Highsmith and Larry Ogunjobi.
Is this going to be an edge?
Yeah, I think he's going to be a tall stand-up edge type.
All right. The thing is, there, like you noted, that probably going to be have a practice squad exemption for him. Then, so
is this like Scotty? Is this like Christian Scotland Williamson? Right. Is this the same pathway? Because he's not part of the IPP, the International Pathway Program that Travis Clayton and those guys are part of. So I don't know exactly what the carve out is here, but yeah, I guess you can keep him and he won't count against your practice squad spot.
Yeah, and you know, you never know what you might be able to develop moving forward in guys like that. So it feels kind of like a freebie, per se, if you will, moving forward. And I mean, I don't know how much you've watched on him. I haven't watched any of them.
No, not yet. I saw a clip or two. His street cone time was interesting, 7.01 for how tall he is. I mean, anything under for me for an edge, 7 seconds or below is interesting. And, you know, for a tall, long guy like that, you wouldn't expect a three cone time to be that impressive. So we'll see on him. You probably know more about Jacoby Windman than I do right now.
Yeah.
So jump in here.
Yeah, he was the kid in that tunnel altercation with them.
Is that what that was?
Yeah, with Michigan State. Then I went back and he was the only one that I kind of deep dived last night to some degree. They moved him around a lot at Michigan State. You know, he'd line up over off the edge, line up off the ball, and all like that. I think they're going to look at him as an inside linebacker and not an edge, but he can come off the edge and rush. I'll give him that there, but just kind of the feel. And once again, he moved all over in that defense there. I think that they're going to probably look at him at the all as an off the ball linebacker there, but he's got some sacks, he got some big hits, he's got some forced fumbles there. It looks like he can move a little bit. So, you know, who knows? Maybe this be a practice squad in off the ball linebacker.
I know you kind of referenced it, but athleticism, where is he at? Does he look like a pretty good athlete in space?
I didn't go that deep with him to see how he moves, you know, how he moves out in space, but I think he's got a pretty decent profile on him.
I mean, but just, he felt athletic on tape, just kind of, you know, he's not some sort of big, just old school linebacker.
No. He should be able to run. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. All right, cool. So you think practice squad potential for him?
Yeah, I think there's a chance there.
Okay. Yeah. Good deal. And then finally, I can shed some light on the final name here on John Rice.
Real quick, 6'3", 235 pounds. Looks like his 40 time was 4.65, 20 time 2.56, broad jump 9.7, short shuttle 4.40, three cone 7.31. Got some decent arms, 32 2 3/8, and some nice hands at 9 5/8. So at 6'3", he's going to be an off the ball. He's not going to be an edge guy there, but he can rush the edge, turn the corner a little bit there. But I think there's a little bit of athleticism to work with. Look, how many times have we talked about some of these undrafted guys, and you get, you know, 2 weeks away from training camp and they're out the door already. You know, there have been instances of that, but I mean, I think this is a kid that's going to potentially at least stick on into training camp and then maybe battle for a practice squad spot.
All right. Good deal. The last name here is one I could speak to. It was the final scouting report that I had written. Just took a flyer on trying to find some late round quarterbacks or undrafted quarterbacks, because I knew they would sign somebody. John Rice Plumlee from Central Florida. And whenever it was Plumlee that announced he was signing, my first question was, what position is he signing to play? Because he's been a quarterback and a wide receiver. He began his career as a top recruit, as a quarterback, went to Ole Miss. They converted him to receiver late in 2020. He played receiver all of 2021. He transfers to Central Florida for 2022, goes back to quarterback, and has played there the last two seasons. He's been announced as a quarterback by the team, so I assume that's where they're going to either primarily or exclusively play him. When I watched the tape, Dave, my thought was he's got to go back to receiver. I don't see the consistency, especially with his accuracy, to play quarterback. He's got some size issues as well, but I think the accuracy was very spotty. He struggled in some adverse rain and weather conditions handling the football, but he's a quarterback. He's a great athlete, just like pure athlete. He's tough. He's a gamer. I think the coaches love him, but I wonder if he's going to do anything else besides quarterback, because it's going to be obviously a tough path to be the number four. And I think as a quarterback, just watching his tape, there's some pretty big issues there.
Now, here's the thing. Other than another invite that we think that we know about, he's going to be the only one signed actually under contract that can participate in the rookie minicamp, right?
Yeah, he'll be their rookie minicamp again. I mean, he's going to play quarterback. He's announced as quarterback, so I assume that he will. I thought, and I'm not the only one to think it, but there were people wondering, should he make a position switch back to wide receiver? I wonder in camp, would they try to do something else with him? Because number four quarterbacks doing a lot of standing around during camp. Can you get him on special teams? Can you throw him in receiver? Yeah, it's asking a lot, obviously, but this dude's a fantastic athlete. He ran 4.53. At that Big 12 Pro Day. He played baseball his entire career during college. He was playing baseball in the outfield for Central Florida last year. He had 10 home runs and stole 18 bases. So, I mean, this guy is just a really good athlete overall. He got hampered by a meniscus injury last year, which I think certainly maybe messed with his mechanics and limited his mobility. But, you know, I know he's the number four quarterback, and so I'm not trying to kill the guy because his accuracy is not that great. But I just thought when I watched his tape, I said this guy's got to go play back to wide receiver.
I think I saw an interview with him. Somebody had him either during the Big 12 Pro Day or during the Combine. I remember seeing an interview. It seemed like a good kid and all like that. But I have not dug into his tape, obviously, any, and you have. So good on you.
Yeah. Actually, I mentioned him on the podcast yesterday when I talked about Javon Baker, and Baker had a really good season. He was catching passes from Plumlee for most of the year, but he's always been hurt. Going back to high school, his touchdown interception ratios have always been underwhelming, but he's athletic. He can, if he's playing quarterback, which it sounds like he will, he's going to run the ball in preseason. If he gets some snaps, he'll be able to make some plays with his legs.
All right. And about a couple of invites that we know about.
Yeah, only two that I'm aware of as of right now. There's, what is it, Trey Brown, the center from Jacksonville State. I haven't done a lick of really research on him. He's, you know, size is okay. There's Aeneas Dennis from Benedict College, who's a D2. He actually had a really good year last year. He threw 23 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. His team went undefeated in the regular season. They lost in the first round of the playoffs to Lenoir Rhine. But he was awesome in that game. He threw for 400 yards, 4 touchdowns. They just couldn't run the ball, couldn't get stops defensively. So Aeneas Dennis, HBCU, we know Omar Khan was at the HBCU Combine and Legacy Bowl. And so he should be the other quarterback coming in for rookie minicamp.
All right. And I would imagine by the end of the day, we'll have, because the invites usually slowly come in the next day, next several days here. So we ought to start being able to build out an invite list here pretty quick.
Yeah. And now again, Pittsburgh will hold the rookie minicamp 2 weeks from now. That's going to be when it put dates on May 10th through the 12th or whatever it is. They always go 2 weeks after the draft. So that's when they'll first bring the rookies in and get those guys together.
All right. As we think the roster sits right now, 3 open roster spots.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's why we thought the undrafted class would be closer to 8. And it's only 5. Now, could they add more undrafted guys? Sure. Didn't they go in with like 89?
Something like that. They had like one or two spots open, didn't they?
Yeah. So it's, yeah, maybe that's how they're playing this thing. But we'll see. Could they add a veteran? I think it's certainly possible.
Yeah, I would agree too. And I think Omar Khan, you know, was asked about, will this team add a wide receiver or something moving forward, and they're going to keep all options open. And here's the interesting thing. I think I've brought up as well too recently. What's rosters going to look like around the league right after the draft here? You know, there's obviously going to be some players are on some teams cut, obviously, at various positions. It happens every year. Might there be somebody worth, you know, signing being about to be cut from another team?
Yeah, Dave, I mentioned that this morning in terms of what else they could add. And I think in terms of the glaring holes on this roster, that there's 2 slot corners still not been really adequately addressed. Of course, they did bring in Beanie Bishop, but you're not going to count solely on Beanie Bishop to be your guy. So there are veteran options to explore there. Chandon Sullivan, I've maintained they could circle back to Patrick Peterson, and apparently they met with Cam Sutton. We'll see what happens there, but I guess you can't take that off the table. I really look at outside wide receiver, though, and I mentioned this even on the podcast going into day 3. Could they double dip at receiver, get a bigger outside type of guy? I know you had Ruben Wilson. That's exciting. That's a good pick, but he is predominantly played in the slot. So I think if you're Omar Khan, you're still looking to find that veteran outside receiver with some size who can come in and potentially be a, you know, guy in 12 personnel.
It feels like they need that, right?
To me, it's they got to do that still. I think at slot corner, they're going to bring in a veteran. I'm confident in that, but there are names that are easy to mention. I think receiver kind of gets more interesting.
I mean, no disrespect to Roman Wilson. I mean, like the pick, I think he can fit. I think there's a role for him with this team, but Van Jefferson and Quez Watkins, and they've got the interesting kid, who is it, Callaway?
Marcus Callaway, Mims.
Mims, but it feels like you need that one other guy there.
The question is who? It sounds like the 49ers stuff is not going to happen. Cortland Sutton's the name that'll be talked about kind of as the new Ayuk in the sense of the trade receiver everyone will talk about. Obviously not the same player. as Brandon Ayuk. I look at some veteran free agents though too, a DJ Chark, a Michael Gallup. You get somebody like that, I think they have to get somebody like that, Dave.
They got to get somebody that's going to move the needle a little bit more, especially while they develop a guy like Roman Wilson and you know, in that position group and all like that. So I'll be surprised if over the course of by the time this team gets to really even OTAs, they got to add to that room.
They do. I mean,
They've got the cap room to do it. They've got the cash spending says they should do it. Now, I'm not saying go out there and sign a guy for, you know, even though they could, you know, the Brandon Ayuk money or the Deebo Samuel money or anything like that. But I mean, for whatever, and once again, I think this is going to be interesting to watch some of these guys around the league right now that might be overpaid right now at the wide receiver position. And with this team draft, you know, in other words, guys that may have had their roster spots a little bit in question heading into the draft. And then obviously after the draft, the teams that maybe draft some wide receivers with some early picks and think they can get some early production there. There's going to be a wide receiver or two around the league cut by a team that might interest the Steelers there. But it does. I think we're going to be able to rewind back to this episode in several more weeks and say, yeah, it felt like that was the way this is going to go, and that's the way that it went.
I agree. Again, I think you're going to see two veterans get added here before camp. I can't tell the exactly when, maybe before OTAs. We see stuff in June happen, you know, quite a bit too. Okungjobi in recent years being an example of that. But I think a slot corner probably reuniting with an ex-Steeler, Sullivan, Peterson, perhaps Sutton, and then adding a veteran wide receiver in some capacity, some guy that can come in and has experience and probably can be a starter for you, whether that's Chark, Gallup, or Courtland Sutton. Let me ask you this, Dave. Which C. Sutton is more likely to be a Steeler in 2024, Cam Sutton or Courtland Sutton? It's a little like, what's more likely from the Rich Eisen show? What's more likely, Cam Sutton or Courtland Sutton?
Man, I probably wouldn't have said this before a couple of days ago, but I'm going to go Cam Sutton.
Yeah. I mean, I we're not going to wade into all of those waters today in terms of, you know, whatever, everything he's dealing with, but there appears to be some interest there, and he can play slot corner.
Yeah, if not for Dulac saying that they sat down with him, you know. Sure. But I mean, I think of the two, it might end up, you know, obviously it might end up being neither of them, but it does kind of feel like, I mean, obviously, and Cam Sutton's not under contract right now, so Of the two, it feels like Cam. So, look, you could do worse than getting him back in the slot role, you know, versatility. And his career obviously didn't go great at well. You know, the legal stuff aside, them trying to make it more of an outside corner of him in Detroit didn't go all that well. He's a slot in the NFL, right?
I mean, he played on the outside his last year in Pittsburgh for a lot of snaps, and he held up okay, I think. I don't know what exactly went wrong in Detroit, but yeah, he didn't have the year in Detroit that he was hoping he would have.
You know, he's a guy that could give you some snaps here if you need it and all like that. But he's not an every down cornerback in the NFL, I don't think. But I mean, can you specialize a role with him? You know, especially in inside, I think you can. But I mean, look, they need to address that position as well too, and it's good to see them get a guy like Beanie Bishop in as an undrafted. So we'll see if that turns out to be anything, and there might be another corner around the or two around the league with some slot capabilities that might capture their attention.
Sure, I don't have a list of those names, but there may be some other veterans out there, or again, Patrick Peterson is still sitting right there, and they had said the door was not closed on him to return. and if the door was going to stay open and ajar, it'd be because they didn't add somebody in free agency or the draft to play in that slot role, and they really effectively have not done so. So I expect a former Steeler to play slot corner for Pittsburgh next year, and I expect a veteran receiver from somewhere on the outside to come in as well.
Right, right. I agree. I think we'll be able to look back at this. I forget where the cutoff post I've wrote about this in the past, though, but guys that are not with – what was it? Guys that are not with the team at the start of OTAs or some – either OTA, no, I think it's OTAs. If you look back at Steelers rosters over the years, there were some guys that weren't at the start or even participated in OTAs because they weren't under contract at the time that ended up on the 53-man roster, right?
Right. It was like it was happening every year for this, you know, 5-plus-year streak. So certainly there will be some new additions to this roster. Guys will be on the week one roster that are not currently Pittsburgh Steelers.
All right, let's throw it out there right now then. And we'll only look back at it if we're right. no, I just will someone not on the roster right this moment under contract be on the 53-man roster come week one?
Oh, 100%. I think you can take that to the bank right now. Right. I think it's going to be more than one, too, because, again, I think they're going to add slot corner veteran, bring back somebody, and then go add a receiver. And who knows what else happens along the way.
All right. Good stuff. All right. We're going to talk a lot more about these draft picks for the next several weeks and the roster and all like that. Thoughts on the class overall? I mean, we hit that at top, I guess.
Sure. No, I'm happy. Like I said, I think you can easily argue that for his 2 years drafting as the Steelers GM, that Omar Khan has had the best class of the draft. It was focused. It improved on the offensive line. You knew you weren't going to address everything. You didn't have the picks to do so. So, again, you're going to feel empty at outside receiver. You're feeling empty at slot corner. But for the guys they drafted, the value they got, not having to go up and make trades and give up their kind of limited capital to go get a Zach Frazier or Roman Wilson or Farouk Tanu or something like that, the board certainly has been very friendly to Pittsburgh these 2 years. But Pittsburgh, I think, has taken advantage and not – scoot up kind of the gifts that have been handed to them in some respects. So yeah, I think it's a good class overall.
The most surprising pick because of what had already been picked was probably Mason McCormick, right?
Yeah, there weren't a lot of big shocks when they draft 5 of their 7 from their pre-draft visit list. There aren't any names that really catch you out of left field. And right. when your non-visit list is Roman Wilson, who we knew they liked, and you know Ryan Watts being the last pick of their class is not going to shock anybody in any dramatic way. But yeah, I think taking that third offensive lineman was mildly surprising, but does not mean it's a bad pick. It was not a bad pick.
Right. And at least they had some interaction with Spencer Anderson last year was the guy that kind of caught us off guard, right?
Right. That was kind of the 7th round, but that last pick usually sometimes will come out of, you know, a guy that's really hard to predict.
All right. Anything else? You want to get to some emails? Because we've bypassed those the last several days.
Yeah. Let's get to some emails and close out today's show. You sound much more rested today than I am. You sounded yesterday. I think we flipped the script here a little bit.
Yeah, I feel better. But I mean, I even told my wife, you know, I'm mania bipolar, and I was just so amped up for some reason last night. My mind was racing, and I even tried to go to bed a little bit earlier there. And I told my wife, she said, what's the matter? You can't sleep? And I said, no, my mania is kicking in. So it took me a little while from the moment I laid down to actually go to sleep last night.
Sure,
But I feel okay overall here. Let's see. We'll get to some emails here from LM. Thank you, he says. No question, just saying thank you. Best Steelers draft coverage there is. Let me tell you, we appreciate that. Second, we are just, once again, just so blessed to have the help that we have and to be able to have all the guys doing these profiles and being able to quickly pull these profiles up. And you know, you have Tom Meade writing about the value of the pick right after and all like that. It makes for a great process when you see a guy come off the board that the Steelers pick and immediately you feel like you know more than just height, weight, about the guy there. So LM, we appreciate that. For sure.
And even I just have to mention too, we did some interviews with some of these guys. Our Tony Calderon talked to Logan Lee at the Shrine Bowl. And I think one of the reporters had to have heard that. They didn't say it was from us, but it certainly was from us, about the story of Logan Lee meeting Mike Tomlin in high school and Lee almost running Tomlin over. And I guess, and Tomlin was asked about that, didn't remember. But as they cut away from the press conference, Tomlin, you could see him ask the reporter, like, following up on that, trying to find more details. So, yeah, I mean, we have not just the player, but often the person we have some information on as well.
I'm sure when Mike Tomlin asked a reporter that, the reporter said he read it on Steelers Deep. I'm almost positive that he said that.
Gave him the link and everything. Right. I'm sure that's what occurred.
All right, from buddy Ron Reagan, who I know has written in before. He says, when I finished the most recent podcast, I'm guessing the one Friday, or it would have been Saturday morning. He said my app reverted to an older episode I had not completed. He said March 1st, episode 95, about 35 minutes into the show. Uh-oh, what we got here? He says, you discussed the Steelers' needs at offensive tackle. You go on to discuss other positions of need, Deontay Johnson and inside linebacker needs. He says, I doubt Yens go back and listen to your previous comments very often. Who has the time for that? He says, especially now with the frenzy surrounding the draft. He says, when you get a chance, you may surprise yourselves with the accuracy of your analysis about 60 days ago, he writes. I just want to tip my cap to you and your support team for the extensive, exhaustive, and I'm sure exhausting coverage of the draft. Ron from South Pasadena, Florida there. Ron, no, we don't have time to go back and, you know, obviously some of these shows, as long as they run, we say a lot of stuff in there. We appreciate that compliment. And yeah, it's nice to think that some of our 90 or 60 day old analysis, a lot of it came to fruition. I speak for Alex in this. We try to look at all sides of whatever we talk about and try to make the most educated opinion along with, you know, some, I wouldn't like to say a lot of hot takey stuff, but some takes, if you will, within that. And we like to think that maybe we get a lot of stuff right, but in the same breath, when we don't hit all of it. Nowhere close to all of it. You could probably go back in several shows and say, man, can you believe you guys said this and look what happens now. Do we hit? I would imagine on some of our analysis we do. Do we miss on it? It's just like draft evaluations as well too. I mean, you see some stuff and yeah, you're probably going to hit. You're probably going to nail this prospect, but you know, other prospects you're not going to nail. You're not going to be 100% in this business, but I think Alex and I do try to at least, you know, feel like we look at this from all sides and give you our best, what I would like to say, educated guess.
Mm-hmm. That's what it's all about, the educated guesses. And I think that, and I appreciate the reader bringing that up. Usually when someone says, remember that time you said right. This thing is usually not met with something positive. It's usually trying to throw something in our face. So I appreciate the compliment there. But I think if you look at, again, your mock draft, Dave, I thought was, you know, spot on. You're putting Zach Frazier in there, Roman Wilson in there. I mean, just guys that became Steelers. I know the rounds were not, you know, exactly right. But
right.
You know, I didn't think Wilson was going to fall to 84 there. So, but I think you were on that to hear Josh call Ryan Watts, which was an awesome call by him. A lot of us had Logan Lee, myself included, in the sixth round at that spot there. We talked about their interest in inside linebacker. They were going to take an off-ball linebacker, probably higher than people thought. So, again, not going to get everything right. The draft is unpredictable and fluid, and we're not in that building. But I think our work in squinting at pro days pays off this time of year.
Oh, absolutely. And look, that it's a fun part. The pre-draft process up until the draft is really a fun part of the process overall. Now, like most of you listening, it does get right up close to the draft where you say, man, enough of the mock drafts, mm-hmm. especially in that final week there and all. But appreciate the shout out there, Ron. Appreciate you listening for sure. And LM, thank you for the kind words as well, too. Still Pastor, our buddy Still Pastor writes in, you guys are on fire this year. The site and the staff have really developed into the go-to for Steelers info for the 10-plus years I have been following. Well done. My question is, when will teams begin to shape their rosters after the draft? He says, starting Monday, as each team adds new players, some will be cut or traded as always. Dates, any particular players in mind? Your thoughts. Pastor Green, look, this goes back to kind of at what we said towards the end of the show there. That kind of stuff's going to probably start happening Monday, where you start to see some of these teams trim. There will be some guys cut that'll make you kind of wonder. I wonder if the Steelers will go after that guy as well there. So that stuff usually happens not too long after the draft. Heck, wasn't last year the Steelers during the draft signed Chandon Sullivan?
Yeah, they've been really active. Joe reminded me of that. I had forgotten about Sullivan. Sullivan was literally being signed mid-draft, and then Keanu Neal was signed right after the draft. And 2 years ago, it was DeMonte Casey. And so it would be no surprise if this team signs a vet by Monday even, especially given they have three open roster spots right now.
Yeah, so the way – look, really still Pastor – all these next 2 weeks, really, it's going to be fun to watch the waiver wire to see – what team lets go of this guy? What team, that guy that they released might fit with? I think there's probably going to be a couple posts on Steelers Depot where we're writing about, X team released X player, might the Steelers, because of either past links to them or positional fit and all like that, they're probably going to be a post or two about it.
For sure. The conversations there will continue, and I expect something will happen relatively soon.
Mark Urbaniak writes in, you guys are amazing. Everything keeps getting better and better with your site. Love the new Depot Dive show, he writes as well, too. Nice. Two questions. How do you think the Steelers approach each day of the draft? Day one, they picked 20th. Do you think they had a list of 20 players and took the player at the top of the list? No question asked, he asked. Or do you think they were negotiating as their pick came closer? I think Alex is about – I'm going to let Alex answer this question. B, I think Alex might have an interesting post coming up on the site.
I think I will. That'll be later today. We'll talk about it on Monday's show. It's essentially, I don't know what he meant by negotiating. I don't know if he was talking about trading or negotiating as in discussing about who to take. Generally, on day one, your board is set and Pittsburgh will follow their board. And Mike Tomlin confirmed they rank players 1 through 20, not a mock draft, but just who is their top 20 players in the draft. And yeah, I think essentially whoever that top player is going to be their pick. Now, we heard Mark Gorsak speak recently, at least under Kevin Colbert, of two guys who are really close, very similar grades. Then if there was a need at one position and not at another, you probably take the need guy instead. So that probably still is functionally how it works. We know that Pittsburgh is not, drafting solely BPA. They're always drafting somebody that can, be an impact player and fill a need right away. And that's going to be the case with Fautanu. But yeah, essentially they list out their board 1 through 20, and whoever that top guy is their pick. And those things have already been decided because their board's been set by then. There's no debating. Do we like this guy more or that guy more? That's already been done ahead of the draft.
Yeah, and I hate to kind of tease a post like this and not talk about it on a podcast. We'll talk about it after the fact. But Alex specifically before in our 3-hour production pre-production meeting asked me about a topic. Something that he found similar to this, and I don't want to ruin it and all because you're gonna write about that, right?
Yeah, I want to do a little more research and kind of put all my thoughts together, but I should write about it sometime here on Sunday.
All right. So we hate We got to tease something there, so we'll tease that for sure. Second part of the question, to me, it seems like every pick in the first 2 days were zero drama and zero diva picks. Total football junkies and passionate players. The coaching hires seem to be more of the hard nose, no nonsense types. Do you think things boiled over with certain players, which led to this change? If so, do you think this is an owner, GM, or coaching staff call? He says, I absolutely love where things are going with this team. Very positive. How would you answer that?
Yeah, I don't know if boiling over is the issue. I think Pittsburgh understood. I mean, they've had a desire to have this rough and run game physical identity for a little while now, but they've really not put that plan well in the place in terms of the execution of it. For in 21, they really had no vision of who they wanted to be. To me, in 22, they had a vision of who they wanted to be, but really didn't have the personnel to get there. Maybe I'm getting my years mixed up. Maybe 22. Either way, I think they've slowly been able to go from no identity to a vision with the personnel. And then I think this year, hopefully, is, you know, vision, personnel, and execution, kind of just building blocks on that. Now, where does that come from? A variety of sources. I think Andy Weidel certainly will have an impact on that in some regard, given what he did at Philadelphia, how they built that team there. You're seeing a similarly built team in Pittsburgh. But I think Pittsburgh just understands that they have to, you know, really find out who they are and go all in on who they want to be and begin to match personnel to their personality.
Good answer there for sure. I would agree with everything you said there. Let's see if I can get another email here. Deshaun Campbell writes in, "Sup guys, I'm sending this email as the third round is going. Two questions. How do you feel about Roger Goodell saying he's not a fan of the preseason and seemingly wants it gone? And also with a lot of the slot cornerbacks gone, could or would a guy like Kalen King be a good slot fit for this team?" Well, I mean, the second part of the question obviously is already answered. Who did Kalen King sign with? Do we know?
He got drafted by somebody. He was late. I think he got drafted by. Let me double check here. He's not available yet. Green Bay took him at 255, okay. So the third to last pick. So I don't know when this was sent. Maybe sent before he was selected, but no longer an option.
Yeah, he said he sent this before the third round got going. What do you think about Roger Goodell saying he's not? I didn't hear those comments. I have not read them yet. So much going on there, but supposedly saying he's not a fan of the preseason and seemingly wanting it gone.
That was on the Pat McAfee show on Friday, and a pretty good interview that those guys did. Yeah, it was Goodell saying basically in the idea of wanting to push for an 18-game season, which is inevitable. We're going to go to 18 games here under the new CBA whenever it expires later this decade. Dave, I think we're the only two people that would push back on it and want to preserve the preseason. I know that Goodell said, I don't like the preseason. I don't think you guys like the preseason. And I was sitting there listening going, I like the preseason. And it's a time for those young guys to develop and for, you know, a guy like Beanie Bishop to state a case for himself. I think it's a really important developmental time. So, I mean, that's where this thing's going to go. We can fight all we want, Dave. They're going to go to 18-game regular season schedule to preseason sooner, you know, the second they can once the CBA gets renegotiated. But personally, I think it comes at a cost of development for these young guys and for that rookie, that undrafted free agent to try to make the team. I think that path becomes harder and harder.
If it was up to me, I'd push for all four preseason games. I understand we had this conversation when it got shortened down and all like that. I love it because I don't go to training camp and see these guys like Alex does. So I like the younger guys on the roster. I want to see them play some football, and I want to be able to watch the fourth quarter guys and everything that goes along with that there. So. Plus, I'm an old curmudgeon too. I don't like change and all like that. But I mean, I do get excited for preseason games, specifically for the younger guys on the roster, and I think it helps them state their case. And Mike Tomlin has said as much. I'd like to hear Mike Tomlin in the next press conference be asked about Roger Goodell's comments, just the way he's asking us about them. what he thinks about the preseason games. Look, if you don't want a guy to play in a preseason game, don't play him in a preseason game. If the player's worried about getting injured, I understand that. If a player really says, you know what, I'd rather not play in the preseason, I know I'm going to make the roster, I understand that. Don't play that player. But what about guys on the roster from 54 to 90? You know, those guys probably want to play.
They want to, they need to. That's how they get evaluated. So, I mean, I'm sure Goodell would sit there and say, well, there's still two games and they hold joint practices, which not every team does. Pittsburgh hasn't had a joint practice in quite some time. And plus, those things always break out in fights. And so it seems counterproductive to even hold joint practices. We'll fight the fight. We'll die on that hill, Dave, but we're fighting a losing battle there.
All right, I think we got through most of them here. We're running, got about 90 minutes or so in, I think, today, right? When did we start this? Seven what?
Yeah, we're about just on 90 minutes in.
All right. We will get back after. We're going to do a show. I got to go to the dentist on Monday. I know that. So I don't know what time. Were we going to do a Monday show?
Yeah, I think we'll still do our Monday, Wednesday, Friday routine for a little bit longer.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Appreciate all the, once again, we appreciate all the support that everybody has given us up until this point of the off season here. We appreciate all of our help and all the hard work everybody has done on the site, with our contributors as well. So I know Dr. Mel's got that, what does she call that series?
The entrance physical.
All right. So there are a couple of players. Yeah, obviously, everybody going to be looking forward to that Peyton Wilson entrance physical post that she does. I think that's going to be the first one out of shoot, maybe up on the site later on today as well, too. So just because the draft is over with, I mean, we still got a lot of content, a lot of film breakdowns, a lot of analytical breakdowns coming as well. But we just want to take a moment to thank the listeners, thank the site visitors, thank our contributors for all the hard work during this long off-season process of the pre-draft process here. So with that, as always, you can follow me on Twitter /X at Steeders Depot. Follow Alex at Alex_Kozora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, SteedersDepot.com. Hit the donate button up right navigational bar. Also, if you like an ad-free version of the site, SteedersDepot.com. Hit the ad-free button and follow the directions that way there. So until the Monday show, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.